Dear Jesus, thank you for being here tonight. Thank you. All right, let's pray and we'll get going. Let's really pray. If you'll bow your heads, God, thank you for this day. We are indeed grateful for your presence here tonight. We thank you for this couple that will share their life with us, and we're thankful for this family that we call Skyline, and just you filled it with such incredible people, and we thank you for that. We pray for our marriages that God, you would just bless them. Thank you that the ones here have chosen to be here to learn, and so I pray that you would just teach them tonight, just from Gary and Michelle's story and from your story. God, help us to be more like you in our character so that our marriages can flourish. And we thank you for all this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, Gary, Michelle, come on up.
Testing. One.
Very nice. You got it? There you go. You're good. All right. Well, thank you guys for being here. I appreciate it. Week two. And we're excited to talk and hear about Gary and Michelle and what they have to teach us. And like I told you last week, this is not just so that you can hear a bunch of great stuff. That's part of it. But what my desire and hope is that as a family, we're sharing life together. We're teaching each other. We're learning from each other. And so I've told Gary and Michelle that my biggest hope is that you all would get to know them better, know their story, and want to take them to coffee, have them over for dinner, and be able to ask...
Coffee, dinner, that's good.
Be able to ask more intentional questions to them. And get to know them a little bit more. So that's my ultimate goal, and this is just bonus, okay? So thanks for being here. We'll jump in. Like last week, if you guys have questions, you can text them to me. I'll have an open mic time after we take a little break. So we'll go about 20 minutes. We'll take a break. We'll have open mic time. We'll come back, answer some more questions. If you want, if I don't ask a question that you want, just text it to me. And I'll try to multitask, which I'm not very good at, but we'll do our best. All right. How you guys doing?
Fantastic.
Good, good. Tell us about your life, how you met, your family, you know, that kind of stuff, quick.
So I talk a lot. I don't want to talk over her. So if I'm doing all the talking, people just kind of do this, and I'll take that as a clue.
Point to her.
I was just a little non-traditional. I was 21, she was 18. Anybody here old enough to remember International Fitness Center? That was the hot place in Oklahoma City, like eight or nine or 10 of them around town. Well, I worked at the flagship at Quail Creek on May and Britain. I was a gym guy. And we were open 6 in the morning to midnight. Well, I had bailed out of Oklahoma Christian a couple years earlier, so I hadn't been there in a couple years, so I'm just working. And I was closing that night. We had 12 racquetball courts, 5 pools. It was a huge place. So it was a Friday night? No, Saturday night. And it's midnight. I'm closing, and I look down the stairs going out this door, and I recognize the back of this guy named John Romano, who I went to college with. The door slammed. I ran down the stairs. I yelled at him. He was getting in his car. I go, Romano, and so, what are you doing? He said, man, 6 o'clock in 6 hours, I'm getting in my car. I'm headed to Padre. I'm picking up Shin and Autry, two of our other buddies, and we're going to Padre for a week, spring break. You ought to go. I'm like, I'll be at your house at 6 o'clock. And I was supposed to open the next morning. No, not open. I had to work the next day. So at 6 o'clock.
He forgot to call in.
6 hours later, I was headed to Padre. which tells you how irresponsible I was. Because somewhere around San Antonio, I called and said, hey, I won't be in. They go, for how long? They go, at least a week.
I'm feeling sick for a week.
And so we picked up Shin and Autry and went to Padre. And she had gone with some of her friends. So you can pick it up from here.
It was just my high school spring break trip. You know, that I had a plan for months to go on this trip.
Planner, not planner.
That's a theme you're going to see tonight.
So how did y'all meet? You just ran into each other, like dancing or, you know?
I think there was a push-up contest involved or something.
Should we know that part? Leave that part out?
Say that again.
A push-up contest.
A push-up contest.
You know, it's on the beach.
It's Padre, Spring Bank. So
I wasn't the contestant.
The radio guys are all out, and they've got their speakers, and they had a push-up contest on the beach. Well, I'm a gym guy, so all my buddies are like, gotta go. So I won, and
I
impressed her.
All the time.
I said something like, you're gorgeous, and then he said, what's your name?
And we ended up living
started.
5 miles from each other.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
That's crazy.
You were in Edmond and I was in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, so the next day, my buddies had driven his car, so I didn't have a car. And I found his keys somehow, and we went and got little white donuts and chocolate milk.
At 7-Eleven.
Because they have the best donuts. Yeah.
So, we dated for 6 years?
A couple breaks in between that time, but...
Kind of.
And got married 29 years ago in 2 weeks.
Wow, that's awesome. 29 years, awesome.
So, it's a good story.
That's a good story.
We, it's 1983, so... When songs come on, we always reference Padre songs. And
nice. I'm glad you remember those songs.
Yeah, don't go there.
Okay, tell us about your family. You've got children?
2 kids. Jennifer is 19, and she's in San Francisco going to college.
Okay.
I made the mistake of saying, maybe not a mistake. I said, if you can get a scholarship, you can go out of state. So she worked really hard to get a scholarship.
Very nice.
And then Austin is 23. He's back here.
Yeah, don't look at him, because if he's shaking his head, that means he doesn't believe something we're saying.
I'm glad he's here. So you're the fact checker, okay? If it's not true, just wave your arm. Okay, so when you were dating, then you got married, did you have any idea what marriage would be like? Like, what kind of preparation did you have? Years of preparation, good examples.
Yeah, we never even talked about it. I mean, I don't ever remember even going, hey, let's talk about what it's going to be like. I don't remember ever thinking about it. We both came from families that are still together. My parents were married 54 years. Wow. My mom passed away a few months ago. Her parents are
59 years.
Wow.
But when I don't ever remember, I didn't think very deep at 23 or 4 or 5 or 7.
Yeah, none of us did.
We didn't think long term at all what it would look like.
So then, you know, your first few years of marriage, like we talked with Lance and Stacy last week, did you guys have some struggles out of the chute that you had to work through, and how did you do that? What was your strategy if you had one?
Well, religion was the first one we had to work through, because I wanted to go to church, and I was raised Catholic, and he was raised Church of Christ, and so he really didn't want to come visit my church. So early on, I thought, if we're going to go to church, I'm going to have to visit his church. Yeah. And ended up loving it. So, but that was later, like maybe 3 or 4 years later after we got married.
I grew up in a small town, Ponca City, Church of Christ. My grandfather was a preacher in Snyder, Texas. and just bailed out. At 21, I wasn't going to church, didn't want to go to church. Went to Oklahoma Christian. Chapel and I did not see eye to eye, and they thought it would be a good idea if I didn't come back after my sophomore year. Now, the funny part of that is I think they think I graduated because, like, I was on a board and my name's on a chapel seat somewhere.
His name is in
which is the
chapel.
Funniest part because
you walk in to see your name and you're like, I've never been here before.
No, actually, somebody texted me a picture of it one time a couple years ago. I get this text and he's like, Brooks, you got your name on a chapel seat. I'm like, God, that's the most ironic thing ever. But I just bailed out. I mean, I did not want to go, had no intention of going. Start dating a Catholic from a Church of Christ. You know, my dad was an elder, and I'm thinking, okay, this isn't going to go over real well. There was no social media. There were no telephones. So it's not like it's not like today. You talk to your kids every day. I probably talked to my parents once a month, maybe. So
we wrote letters.
He wrote letters, put them in the mail. Yeah.
So when we got married, I wasn't thinking about going to church. The ironic part is, you know, I told my mom this one time. I said, "Yeah, I married a Catholic. She's the one that got me back in church." Because after a couple of years, she's like, "Hey, we need to be going to church." I'm like, "Man, I don't know. I don't want to do the church thing." Mm-hmm. And she kept pushing and. Finally, we started going, okay, so we started visiting a few places, and anybody know what Steve Farrar, some of the older guys, you know Steve Farrar? He's a men's ministry guy, Point Man, some really good books. And we had gone to Quell Springs Church of Christ, which is where I had attended sporadically in college when my friends made me go. And we were there on a Sunday, and Steve Farrar was doing a men's conference there the next weekend, Friday night and all day Saturday. And Michelle handed it to me, and she goes, "You ought to go to this." And I'm like, "Yeah, right." There is no chance I'm spending Friday night and all day Saturday sitting in this church with 1,000 guys. It's not happening. All week, she's like, "You ought to go to that thing." So I finally just gave in. And I might have been 30, I don't know. I could take you to the pew in Quell Springs where I was sitting, because I didn't know anybody, because I didn't go there. And on a break, I'd gone out, and I'd seen this guy named Todd Wiebe, who I used to party with. And I'm going, wow, you know, he's surprised to see me there. I was surprised to see him there. And he's like, "Brooks, man, you know, when did you find Jesus?" I'm like, "I've did this church deal all my life." He's like, no, really. When did it happen? When did it happen?" I'm thinking, never happened. And I remember he looked at me and he just was like, "Man, you don't get it." I went back and sat in that pew and I was like, "Okay, here's the deal. You either show me you're real or I'm never coming back." And that was it. And I was about 30 years old, and that was the moment. I remember it. Hmm.
So what did you do? Did you go home and tell Michelle about it, or how did you?
I don't remember. She saw a change, because I started going to Mardell's, and I started buying.
He started journaling.
Cassettes. And
cassettes.
So she would be like, "Okay, what's going on?" But, you know, Steve Farrar, I mean, he just captured me. Yeah, and it all happened in that moment. So, yeah, I started journaling probably about that point. I've probably been journaling 25 years at least.
Wow. So tell us some of the differences you saw in him.
More of a leader. More, you know, involved. We were part of a small group for many, many years at Quell, and he started men's ministry teaching.
What was that book?
Point Man?
No. The one, God, I can't think of the name of this book. I'll think of it later. And I had this book at church this guy had written, and some guys came up to me and said, "Hey, Brooks, man, we're thinking about starting a men's ministry, and we'd like for you to, like, start it." And I'm like, guys, I don't know. And they're like, "Well, you got the book." I go, I'm like on chapter 4. They go, "Well, you're farther on than we are, so you need to start this thing." So we had our first, about 135 guys crammed in a room on our first men's ministry night. Wow. And I don't know, I probably did that for 10 years.
Okay, so you guys worked together for a while.
We did.
Tell us a little bit about how you interacted and working. And
we'll start with your three-year itch. You tell that
story. My three-year itch, yeah, okay. Well, so I wasn't like totally focused early on. Well, and I was selling, when we got married, I was selling cars. Yeah, it was at Bob Moore.
You got your accounting degree. You went back to college and got your degree. We wanted to wait and get married till I was out of college, and then you started back to college, so then we had to wait for him to get out of college.
I just knew I had to finish college or she wasn't going to marry me. So, so I went back to college. We finished. We both sat for Becker,
the CPA exam.
She called me and said, "Hey, I got good news and I got bad news." I go, "What's the good news?" She goes, "I passed."
I passed.
I didn't.
I didn't know what to say.
I don't know.
So she goes, "I passed." That's, the bad news is you didn't. Well, I was selling cars for Bob Moore downtown at the Cadillac dealership, and knew I'm a lot better at selling than I was accounting. So I did that a couple of years, and then I had this idea of selling cars.
Kind of like CarMax right now.
It was basically CarMax before the internet.
We didn't have internet back then.
Yeah.
So I quit, and I go home, and I try to start this company with helping people buy and sell cars from my house with no internet. We didn't know what internet was. So that didn't go real well, and ended up, she was in a tips club with a guy named Jerry Hawker, and one day we're either at dinner or something, and Jerry says, "Hey, you ought to come sell real estate." I'm like, "Great, I'll sell real estate." Did that with him for about 9 months. Didn't make a dime. And we're working. I mean, I'm working.
I'm working.
She's got a great job.
You're worried.
She's got a great job. I'm not making any money. And we had saved up some money when I was selling cars and she was working, no kids. But then we spent it during that 9 months that I wasn't making any money. So I come home one night and she goes, "You know, you need to get a W-2 job. This real estate gig is not working." And I just knew that it's what I really wanted to do, even though I was very unsuccessful at it.
It takes a while to get it going, though.
And so I went to a restaurant, Greystone in Edmond. Anybody remember the Greystone? It's where the Petroleum Club in Edmond is now. Yeah, Lemon remembers. So I went to the Greystone because I waited tables at Steak and Ale in college. So I went up there and I got an application to wait tables. And I remember coming home and she goes, "Okay, let me get this straight. We had only been married like a year." She's like, "Okay, you're going to work 60 hours a week at a job you don't make any money at. Then you're going to come home and go wait tables at night so you can keep the job you're not making money at.
And when am I going to see you?"
Yeah.
I go, "Yeah, that's what I'm going to do." And it was shortly after that I think I made $900 on my first deal. And another one happened pretty quick that I met Mark Beffert. And Mark, I remember one day Mark goes, "Hey, you ought to come to CB. With me." He was at CB Commercial. He's already pretty successful. And he goes, "We'd make a great team." And I said, "I'll be there tomorrow." Come home. This is typical. I quit Hawker. I'm going to CB tomorrow. She's like, "Well, what's the term?" I go, "I don't know."
"How much are you getting paid?"
"Don't know."
"How many hours are you going to work?"
So that was my break. I mean, meeting Mark Beffert was the, you know, next to her, was the greatest thing that's ever happened to me.
So I'm guessing that you guys are pretty opposite personality. How are you handling marrying a guy, you're completely opposite. You know, you're a planner. He's flying by the seat of his pants.
I'm a pretty positive person, and so I tend to look at the, you know, the sunny side of everything, and so I just knew he was going to figure it out. I knew, I believed in him. I just had faith that, you know, God was going to provide for us and that he was going to figure it out.
Which is pretty amazing, because I was driving a car that I had to park on a hill so it would roll down because it wouldn't start.
While we were dating, I had to help him jump his car, jump start it.
Yeah. One time I remember telling her, hey, you got to get out and push. So, 1996, one day Beffert and I are in the cubes at CB, and he's like, hey, we need to start our own deal. I'm like, don't have to convince me, I'm easy. So we started meeting and ended up starting Beffert Brooks Property Company in 1996 with no money. In fact, the only arguments Mark and I ever got into in 24 years was whenever we get a little money, he'd want me to take it, and I'd want him to take it. And that was about the only thing we ever argued over.
So I'm a CPA, and so they said, would you do our books? And I had quit my job when I got pregnant with Austin. I intended to go back to work, and I could not do it after I had him. So,
which was a shock, because she was doing taxes at 14. So I always thought she was going to work.
Yeah. I just couldn't do it. And so I came home and said, I can't go back to work. And he was like, okay. So that was a big leap of faith.
Well, then the bombing happened.
Yeah.
Around that time. Michelle's sister, Valerie, was killed in the bomb. And so that all happened right as we were starting our business. We weren't making any money. We had a new kid at home. She quit her job.
I had a 7-month-old baby, and so I had way too much time on my hands after that happened. And so for a distraction, I went and got a part-time job. And that helped a lot.
Well, Beffert and I didn't have any money. And we needed someone in the office to do stuff. So we offered her the job for no pay.
Yeah.
She kindly took it. That was
22
years ago. She says we didn't pay her for
three years.
I think it's two.
going with her. She
we literally had no money. I mean, we could barely cover payroll, and we had like three employees.
I can remember countless times. It'd be 11 o'clock at night. I'm about asleep, and all of a sudden I hear this. You know I can't make payroll tomorrow. Nothing I can do about it at 11 o'clock at night. So I'm going to sleep, and tomorrow I'm going to wake up, and I'm going to think about this.
Yeah, that's something you shouldn't do, wives, just FYI. Don't talk about that at nighttime.
Yeah, I'll tell this story. So we're about a year, Beffert and I are about a year into our business, and, I mean, we're not making any money. And I get a call from a guy named Al Branch. You guys may know Al. Al was with me at Oklahoma Christian. He ended up being the interim president at Oklahoma Christian. Ran Trammell Crow here. And Branch called me and he said, Brooks, we need to talk. And we had brought in a retail partner at that time. And it was 1998. The market's going crazy. Everybody's doing well. We might have made $80,000 the year before. And Al says, we want to buy you guys. I'm like, Bo, we made 80 grand on a 4 multiple. It's 320 grand. We're not selling for 320,000. He said, we're going to offer you $3 million. Sold. Done. So I go tell Beffert, I go, Bub, Trammell Crow wants a bus for $3 million. He's like, I'm in. They fly us to Dallas, meet Trammell Crow. Was one of the coolest experiences. So I get home and I'm on my treadmill in the garage because our house wasn't big enough to keep it in the house. I remember she's in the living room looking for a new house. It was like, we've arrived. And when I grew up, Church of Christ, I don't ever remember anyone ever saying that, you know, God, I heard God speak to me. I don't ever remember that. And I'm on that treadmill. And God said, don't sell. And I remember thinking, I don't know who you are, but I'm selling tomorrow. And I didn't get off that trip about 30 minutes, and I start having this dialogue with whoever this is, and I get off that treadmill, and I call Beffert. Immediately, it's 9:30, and I go, Bub, I can't explain this. This is the weirdest thing, but I think God just told me we're not supposed to sell. And I'll never forget it. Beffert goes, okay, then, we won't sell. Just that fast. Now I got to go tell her, don't look for a house, because you, and I remember her going, we can't make payroll this week. Like, yeah, I know, but I don't think we're supposed to sell. So I call Branson. He goes, Brooks, are you negotiating? I go, brother, there's no number. He goes, well, raise the offer. I said, Al, don't do it. There's no number. We're not selling. And, of course, today, Mark's done pretty well.
Yeah.
So we worked together about 10 years, and I had this little rule. I said, when we're at the office, we're not married, because I didn't want, you know, anybody to talk or anything. Mm. So that's how we kept it, and we get along great.
Yeah. How did you do at home communicating? Because, you know, working together, did you have any disagreements, and you had to take that home
not
with you?
Not really. It's kind of nice being in the same industry, because we both know what's going on, and we kind of have that common factor to talk about. And so really, I can't remember any disagreements.
No, I mean, we never had any problems with it. I liked it. Beffert obviously liked it. I decided to...
2006 happened.
Yeah, I was going to leave.
Or 2008.
I was going to go out on my own. Beffert had already started buying office buildings. We had done one together, and I said, I want to go do apartments. And
he wanted to do development.
So I wanted to go do my own stuff and build, be a developer. And so I called him. I go, we've been together 20 years. Hmm. I say, Bub, man, I got bad news. I said, look, I think it's time. I'm going to go out on my own. I want to go start developing apartments. No, man, Brooks, that golly, you know, I can't believe it. All he said was, you're not taking your wife, are you? That's it?
And I'm still there.
You're still there.
So that's
awesome.
he denies that story, but it happened.
Yeah.
So she's still there. And
it's been a great job, because it allowed, I work school hours, like 8:30 to 2:30. So it allowed me to be home in the afternoons with my kids and cook dinner. And a big thing to me was having family dinner time. And so he would come in at 6, and we'd have dinner, and our whole family could be together, reconnect.
So what would you say are some sort of non-negotiables that you maybe never talked about, but you just, as you think about them, like, these are things that we made non-negotiable. So maybe dinner was something that...
Yeah, we tried. It didn't always work, but, you know, 80% of the time, dinner time was...
What are some other things that helped your marriage be successful over the 29 years?
I was a night owl. I mean, I'd stay up till 1.
When we first met.
And she's 10:30, she's out.
And early riser.
I remember thinking, that's not good, that's not healthy. Mm. So going to bed at the same time became a non-negotiable. I'm going to change my whole habit of how I do things, and it's been great.
Yeah.
I'd say that's one.
That's good.
Not being, you know, I remember Steve Farrar in that conference. He's a big guy, if you've ever seen him, and he's just talking, and he's animated, and all of a sudden he stops, and there's probably 1,400 guys in the audience. And he goes, somebody's supposed to hear this right now. And I'd never seen that happen before. You know, God, like, gives a message, a guy stops. He says, if you're away from your wife more than one night, or more than, he said, two nights a month, you better quit your job Monday.
Wow.
And I was like, Bub, that's pretty bold. Golly, that's harsh.
Yeah.
But I got it. You know, once I started teaching men's ministry and studying it, it's a bad deal. And so that was, for me, a non-negotiable was I don't travel. I don't want to be gone.
Lunches and meetings, just not a man and a woman together.
Yeah.
Since we both worked, we're in the workforce, we were like, we're not going to put ourselves in that situation.
That's good. That's good.
I'll think of some others.
Okay, very good. I think it's a good stopping point. So you've heard their story, which is awesome. So let's take just a few minute break, and then if you guys want to just text me some questions after hearing their story, this would be a great time to text. Or if you want to say it out loud, that'd be great too. So take about a 3-5 minute break, and then we'll get back together. Go ahead.
Thank you.
All right, text some questions in here. If you have any questions, text them to me right now. All right. I still have some room on my phone, so if you have questions, let me know as we talk a little bit more.
If it comes in from Jay Lemon, ignore it.
So
delete.
One of the things we were just talking about, obviously, in life, through your married life, we all face trials that aren't necessarily caused by each other, but just life throws curveballs at us. And how you deal with those difficulties in your marriage that are going to come your way and being prepared for those the best you can is important. So I didn't really even know this, so I'm going to ask them, what are some curveballs that life has thrown you that you've had to work through in your marriage?
Yeah, the bombing was, we were young. We were young in our marriage. Michelle and Valerie were best friends. Valerie and I would go to lunch together. I mean, she was my age. She was 3 years older than Michelle. So you don't expect that. I mean, today, it might not be as big a shock because it happens all the time. But when that happened, we could have gone the wrong direction. But Michelle said it right one time. She goes, when bad things happen, we just instinctively kind of leaned into each other, not away. And I'm not sure we did that intentionally. It's just what we did. Okay. And over the years, that really has been a trend that, and when things are a little bit tough, we just come together and get through it. But the big one was, last year she got diagnosed with cancer. We'd gone in for routine, what we thought was routine colonoscopy, and Sanjay, our doctor, came out and said, "Your wife has cancer." I'm like, "Bub, we're just here to check the box, man." What in the world are you talking about? Wow. And the hardest part about it was for a week you didn't know anything because they have got to go through the process of studying it and you go with the oncologist. So we had a week where we knew nothing. My personality is, look, just put your head down and keep running. I don't want to know. She's researching on the internet. And
which
it's
is
like,
not a good thing.
Farrah Fawcett died of this like really fast. And it just was surreal. Yeah. I mean, you can't even imagine. 3.5 weeks later, she's getting chemo and radiation. And I remember sitting with a doctor, and she said, "Okay, you got to get radiation every day. So when do you want to come in?" She says, "Well, I get off work at 3 o'clock, so I'll just come in at 3:30. And the doctor's looking at her like, "You don't understand. You got cancer." And she's like, "Yeah, okay, I'm good." So about the fifth week, she's still working. Wow. Befford calls me.
And I'm fortunate that I can work from home. So I did work from home a lot.
Yeah, but you're still going in. I mean, she was in good shape. We work out together. We have a trainer. We've done that for a long time. It's a big part of what we enjoy doing together. So she was in good shape. She's mentally tough. She has a responsibility. And Befford called me about the fifth week and goes, "Why is your wife at work?" I go, "Bub, she stayed with you. She didn't come with me. What are you calling me for?" And about the sixth week, it hit hard, yeah. And it was a pretty rough time there. You know, and that was, on the one hand, you go, well, that's your worst year. But for us, it ended up being, I think, our best year. You know, after 20-some years, you just realize how selfish I'd become, and you just kind of, you get lax, you know. I used to make breakfast every morning, and once the kids left, I quit doing that. Mm. Just little things that you take for granted, you're not doing. It really helped me refocus, and I think it was a great year for our marriage. It was a great year for our spiritual growth. I started making a list of all the miracles that happened that even led to finding it. Mm. And I had gotten sick with a stomach problem, and I thought it was nerves because I had bought this building downtown. And I finally went to see Sanjay, our doctor, and he goes, well, let me check you out. And
I had turned 50 and not had a colonoscopy yet, and so he got me an appointment, actually.
Because I was sick, I got her an appointment with the nurse, and they ended up, you know, I had some...
Wow.
We came up with about 11 different, just things that God did to bring it to light, or we never would have known.
Wow.
And it was really awesome. A time where we just totally had to trust God that he had a plan.
Yeah.
So our worst year was our best year.
Yeah.
And I'm healed.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, we talked a little bit too about just how you guys grew together spiritually. So, you know, you had a group of people that kind of did life together and church work.
At Quail Springs, we had small groups, and so you got with like 6 to 8 other couples, and you met in each other's homes. You got a babysitter for the kids, and then you had a meal together, and then a Bible study. And that was really those couples, maybe over 10 years, we met with them. Our kids grew up together, and we just did life with them. They became our friends, and that's who we hung out with. And it was a good time, good that's special awesome. Time.
You still connect with those
mm-hmm.
folks?
Yeah. Pretty, for the most part.
Yeah, most of them, yeah.
And what was your, you know, you've been at Skyline for how long?
Since September.
So how did you get here?
Well, we've known the Deweys forever. And back when our kids were even in elementary and junior high, we were like, we need to go to Skyline. We were always curious about the church. But we had Quail that we felt really comfortable at. And
well, then we were at Crossings because Marty Grubbs is a friend of mine and knew those people.
Yeah,
we
switched from Quail after about 20 years and went to Crossings, and it's humongous. And we really felt, we were empty nesters at the time, and we really felt we could just slip in and slip out, and we checked, you know, we were at church today, and nobody missed us. Mm. We didn't get involved, and so
It was too easy there for us. And I'd kind of felt, you know, you can't do this. I mean, at some point, you know, God's like, you got to re-engage, bub.
Yeah,
you know,
thought God really wanted us to be more involved.
Halftime's over, you know, you need to move. And I think Austin was at the house, and he just out of the blue, he goes, hey, Dad, you know Jonathan Middlebrooks, don't you? I go, yeah, why? He goes, man, I'm listening to his podcast. And I went, okay. I get it. You know what I mean? I heard it, and I just told Michelle, I said, hey, it's time.
Yeah. Mm. He said, this Sunday we're
at Skyline.
Your kids
listen to Jonathan Middlebrooks on podcasts. We're supposed to be at Skyline. Mm. And she went, all right, let's go.
Let's go. Cool.
And you can't slip in here and slip out, not be noticed.
Nope. Okay, so.
Yeah, we don't stay at the lake now. We come home on Saturday night. So
that's cool. Okay, so you brought up your son, so let's talk about that a little bit. You know, one of the questions I asked you was to think about what advice would you give to your own children as they enter into, you know, the season of life of maybe getting married at some point. So, Gary, I'll start with you, and then why don't you tell me, Michelle, what advice you would give to your own daughter-in-law or daughter?
My daughter-in-law?
Either one.
I would have told myself, you need to just chill out a little bit. I'm known for a little bit high intensity level. And I think the advice I would give is, you know, a lot of stuff you think's a big deal, it's not a big deal. You know, the other thing, one of the things I taught hard as a fundamental in my men's ministry was men are initiators, women are responders. And that concept changed my life.
And it's true.
You know, it's just the way we're wired. It's not a sexist thing. It's just, you know, I would have guys come up to me in my men's ministry and I'd tell them, look, there's a 95% chance if your marriage is not doing well, it's because you're not initiating well. She will respond well when you initiate well. And when you don't, you're not going to get the response that you want. I mean, I've proven it hundreds and hundreds of times with myself. You know, when we're not doing well, all I got to do is look in the mirror, and there's a very, very good chance I'm either not focused, I'm not paying attention, I'm not speaking her love language, I'm not doing something.
That's good.
So what I would tell my kids, I've always heard that there's four things you should talk about before you get married. Kids, religion, finances, and in-laws. Hmm. And I would just say, make sure you get the religion part right, because I look back at, you know, 35 years that we've known each other, and that's woven through everything that we've done together. So if you get one thing right, make sure you could get the religion. At least, I mean, we weren't from the same background, but at least we had the same beliefs.
Yeah.
And I think that helped us.
That's good. What other words of advice? So, you know, for us, or the ones out here that have small children still, you know, in the house, and young marrieds within, you know, say 10, 15 years marriage, what advice would you give them? Looking back at your marriage, what are some keys to success, so to speak, for you?
Something that we always tried to do was not disrespect each other in public. We always tried to, you know, keep a good image of the other person. And then Gary was really good about, at home, the kids did not disrespect me. They always respected me. Mm. I mean, he treated me like I was up here, and I appreciated that. What else would you add to that?
Well, kids teach you a lot in marriage.
And we were not great at it, right?
Yeah.
Austin.
Yeah. Despite us, we have
we had
great
good days and bad days.
You know,
we survived.
Not that we have a perfect marriage, but I'm comfortable sitting up here talking about marriage. If you called me about parenting, I would have said no. I would have gone, man, I'm, despite, you know, my C-minus parenting skills, my kids were great.
Yeah.
When you pray that for God to make you a good father or a good husband or help my marriage, you know, it's the kind of stuff we pray, you need to understand that God will do that. And the way he does that is he's going to break you down. Mm. You know, you can't go to God and say, God, help me have a great marriage and not expect him to expose my sin. He has to. It doesn't work any other way. So if I'm a guy over here that's, you know, I've got a lust problem and I'm praying that God makes my marriage great, guess what's going to happen? He will expose that and it will not be pretty. He's got to deal with that. And I think that's one of the things that I learned just as a father and a husband is, okay, man, you better get your stuff together. Nothing's going to be able to stay in the darkness.
That's good. That's good. Okay, a couple more. I got a couple that came in. Billy wanted to know, by the way, is the book you were trying to remember, Man in the Mirror, by Patrick Morley?
Oh, what about
No, it wasn't, but Morley's got four or five great ones.
Knight, Shining Armor.
No, it was the guy in Colorado that started doing the camps. John Eldridge.
Wild at Heart.
Wild at Heart.
Yeah.
Wild at Heart changed my life. Literally, I mean, it changed my life. I taught on it for years. I probably read it 8 times. Thank you. That was the book. Yeah,
that's good. Jonathan would like to know how many push-ups you actually did.
178. I still know the number.
178?
Well, here's the...
No, I think it was 130.
It was 135. Wow. The bad part was I was like a power lifter. So I never did more than 8 reps. I couldn't raise my arm for 3 days at Padre. That is no lie. I was in so much pain for 3 days at Padre.
And how many can you do right now?
He can do about, 60?
Well, I had shoulder surgery a month ago, but before then, you know, the goal was always keep it 100. That's the goal.
Very good.
Well, it was a guy that played football at OU. I don't remember his name. We were right next to each other. They start cranking the music up because everybody's dying off, and everybody's starting to gather around. I'm thinking, Bub, I don't care who you are, but there's no way. So he cut out at about 90, and I thought, look, I'm just going to keep on smoking, so.
Wow.
And I couldn't raise my arm for 3 days. You ought to see her in the gym, man. She's impressive.
Okay, let's talk about empty nest days. So how long have you been empty nesters?
2 years.
2 years, baby. I loved my kids at every age.
Yeah,
you know, I did the 4 o'clock in the morning. I loved that age. We just had great experiences at every level. But, man, the emptiness is so good. I'm just telling you. But here's what I tell guys. You better be connected. Because when you come home at 6 o'clock, it is just you and your wife and nobody else all night, all day, all weekends. And so the first year, I had a little more. I'm not a guy that's sympathetic, you know. You don't come to me for sympathy on anything. But I understood how it could happen. You know, the last kid goes away and they look at each other going, I don't even know you. And so you see so many divorces. I mean, hundreds of people in my apartments are divorced people after 50. There's hundreds of them. We design apartments because we know they're coming. And for us, it's just been, really good.
But we tried, you know, all along when we had kids, we had, our parents both lived here, so we could, you know, get away for a weekend just with us. We tried to keep common interest throughout the years and, working out together. We both enjoy that, and it's really a good way just to reconnect from your day.
Couch time. We did couch time almost every night after dinner. So
just 5 or 10 minutes.
Just the two of
you? Mommy and daddy time. The kids had to go play or go outside or something.
Just took 5 or 10 minutes,
yeah.
Huh? That was a joke. I'm sorry. I had to go there.
Were you being dirty?
My couch time's a little longer than that.
Hour.
Oh my gosh.
That was the 5th thing. You don't talk about it.
So as you guys were, growing up through the years together in marriage, and you're communicating well, what are some tips on just how you communicated to each other when you did disagree?
Well, I remember a problem similar to what Lance and Stacy said last week I'm more of a let's address this topic right now. If the kids were misbehaving, you know, I want to deal with it right then. And he's more of the thinker and let me figure this out before we address it. So that we kind of had those issues growing up.
Yeah, I wish somebody had told me that years ago. Mm. You know, it took me decades to realize that I'm a real estate developer, so I'm very comfortable in chaos every day.
I mean, not me.
Nothing is. I bought a building downtown. There's chaos every single minute of every day. We have no clue what's happening tomorrow. I'm very comfortable living in an uncomfortable arena. And so when there's problems, she's like, we got a problem, man. We got to deal with this. I'm like, it'll work itself out, you know? So I was terrible at communicating. And I just didn't really realize it for a long, long, long time that, you know, she's got to deal with it. And she's the one that, unfortunately, had to adjust a lot of times because I wouldn't. The communication was not a great strength of ours.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that? Like, how was it for you?
I just had to learn to be patient with, him. And then, you know, the next day I'd bring it up again. Okay, what do you think about this topic? And so,
just
lots
of patience.
Lots of patience.
Very good. Last question I have, and then if you guys have some more, text them in, or I can go out to the audience too. But what impact has your faith had on your marriage? Like, what did you learn about your faith or about God through your marriage?
He's very faithful. God is very faithful. All throughout I call it our business, even though I wasn't an owner. But when Gary and Mark worked together, there were so many instances where I saw God just provide for us. When, you know, like we said, we needed a commission to come in so we could cover payroll, and sure enough, it came. And then with, you know, the bombing, how God just, comforted us when we needed it. And then with my cancer last year, just total trust in God. So I've just seen it over and over and over.
You don't want to take pressure off of yourselves or other people, but God just fixes your screw-ups. Things that I'm not going to do well, he adjusts you, and he just keeps shaping you. Wherever you're at, he just keeps molding and working constantly, no matter where we were. You know, one of the things I learned through my quiet time, and then I'd have seasons where I didn't have that, you know, my connection with her is directly correlated with my connection with God. When my quiet time's good, I react well to her. When my quiet time's not good, she could do the same thing, and my reaction's not good. And so at 56, I'm starting, you kind of learn that after 30 years. You know, God hits you enough times. And you know, it doesn't take me long now to go, well, wait a minute. I've got to be right for us to be right.
Any questions you guys have? Just raise your hand. I can bring you the mic, or you can just shout. Anybody?
Well, we have a tandem bike, so we go ride at Hefner occasionally. Our workout time is 5:30 to 6:30, so we do that 2 to 3 times a week. We have a lake house that we really enjoy. We go to the lake for the weekend.
We play a lot of games.
We like card games.
This Is Us?
He became a huge This Is Us fan.
When's it coming back on?
He's dying to know when it's coming back on.
It's been like a year. The guys are going, so, Brooks, no.
He doesn't play games on his phone, and I'm guilty of that. So he's on Twitter, and
I've never
playing
played a game
on my
a,
phone.
On any device.
Isn't that crazy?
Really?
Why?
But he is on Twitter a lot.
Anybody else?
We don't really fight that much.
Yeah, it's just
when we were younger, married, it was mostly kids issues. Somebody not doing well in school. early on, I was spending too much money before kids. But really, that's about it. What would you say?
I tell you one of the things I learned about kids, or I learned about myself through kids. I say we.
I know. I think I know what you're going to say. Yeah. Don't sweat the small
stuff.
You place
so much emphasis on your kids because your pride is everybody else is going to judge me by how well my kid's acting in church, mm-hmm. right? That's what we did. None of you probably do that. But, you know, when my kids grew up, I automatically assume that other people are now judging how good of a dad I am by my kid, which is so stupid. But I did it, you know. It's just pride. It's a pride and ego thing. And so, you know, she'll tell you when our kids were young,
when they were babies.
Man, the minute the first sound comes out of their mouth, I'm out.
At church, we didn't go to Skyline when our kids were little. We could have stayed in the whole service.
Yep. You
so
could've.
Here's one of the fun things for me. Has been how much we enjoy watching your kids just be crazy during church. I don't know if it's because we've gotten old. I don't know what it is, but we'll find us just, we're watching one of them, we're just laughing, we're looking at each other, and you just want like to grab them. And so that's been a big switch.
Yeah, I would say don't sweat the small stuff. I think we tended to
the medium stuff.
Overreact on some little things. There was one other thing I was going to say.
That's good. Love it. I love it. As long as they don't get hurt, I love it. Any other questions?
Ask him how he got those boots.
Okay, so here's some of you have heard this, so you can ignore it. But I'd never worn cowboy boots. And if you've ever stood next to my wife, she's like 5'9" and a half, and I'm not. And it was like 11 or 12 years ago, a partner I had, we had done a deal, and he's going, hey, we ought to go to buy ourselves a cowboy boots. Why would you do that? So I ended up going, buying a pair of cowboy boots, and I wore them home. And I walked in, and I walked up to her, and she went, I like you in cowboy boots.
I have a few pairs now.
Now has 15 pairs of cowboy boots.
The ones that I like the most are the ones I have on. She got them a surprise for my birthday. Blue alligator.
Blue alligator.
He called them his thunder boots. Yeah,
until they lost.
They're dark navy, almost black.
Anybody else? Going once. Twice. All right. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. Thank you. Hey, next week we have Billy and Kelly, I believe, right? I know you guys will have some very special questions for Billy and Kelly next week, so you can send them throughout the week. That'd be great. Let me close this up in prayer. Father, thank you so much for Gary and Michelle and just their love for each other, their love for you, their example to us, and we're excited for the investment that they're making at Skyline here in our lives, and we just we thank you for that. We pray that, God, we would just take something that was offered to us in wisdom today, and we would we'd discuss it with our spouses and use it to help our marriages just become more rich. And we love you, and we thank you for what you're going to do here in our marriages and our lives. In Jesus' name, amen.